information from around the nation. It's the 411. We're sharing a cake. What a way to make your day. Sharing K is on the way. It's the 411. We're sharing a cake. It's about newsmakers, movers and shakers. Inspiration from around the nation.
Nashville, stop what you're doing. Listen to me very closely. This is Kevin Whalum, local jazz artist, telling you, imploring you, to listen to Sharon Kay with What's the 411. If you do not, trust me, she will put you in a headlock. I speak from experience.
Christ, I'm gonna hurt you. Oh, I was just kidding, y'all. Really not gonna hurt him. I love him. Kevin, you're a mess. Anyway, let me say hello to Nashville. All of our wonderful people. As always, we are totally delighted to have you on board during the drive home this afternoon. And we, there's so much, you know, just Father's Day weekend coming up and everything. And, we have news from the community, two new books, gonna hear about some, X, you'll be in favor of this right quick at the 5 o'clock hour.
Okay.
Some grooming tips for men of color.
Oh, of course.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Just in time for Father's Day. And some Kenny G tickets and everything. So, y'all, don't touch the dial. Now, speaking of news straight and directly from the community, I am going down the street to talk with one of our partners in the neighborhood, and that is longtime staff member, CEO, and executive director of the Jefferson Street United Merchants Partnership, Ms. Sharon Hurt. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Sharon Kay. Good afternoon.
How you doing on this beautiful day?
How y'all doing, man?
We are in pretty good spirits, you know. We have your weekend is coming up, and it's going to kick off all the fun activities for the people that love other styles and kinds of music, amen. And,
yeah.
I know you guys stay busy, but how you been?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, I'm really, really busy these days with council things, and I'm up for re-election again. So, and all that I'm doing with Jump, and I also now am over Street Works. So I'm really, really, really busy. But, you know, God done put more on you than you can bear.
That's
so I'm
it.
Trying to make sure that I do my job.
Yes.
I want to get my crown later
there you
on,
go.
You know?
That's what's up.
So
right
I want to do what he says do and take care of his people.
Yes, Lord. And that's beautiful to hear at the grassroots and community level, and which is where you have spent many, many years, and the community is better for it.
Now, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, Sharon, you all have, this is a big one coming up for the Jump organization.
Yeah.
And I want the community, we got a lot of newbies in Nashville who only think we only do it one way, and that's country style.
Right.
Wrong answer. we throw down in other music as well.
Yes, we do.
And
we
the,
do.
The Jefferson Street United Merchants Partnerships Jazz and Blues Festival has been a favorite in our city for quite some time. You,
this is the 19th year.
It is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
19 years.
And so many people come annually that are with you all the time. Sharon, just for the sake of history, could you just tell people why it was started and what the vision was then as we are in 2019 now?
Absolutely. So it actually started a way to, when I came in a Jump, it was 1999, And during that time, things were really kind of down for the Jefferson Street itself. And I wanted people to know that it was not the way that it had been perceived to be and maybe reported to be, because, you know, sometimes the media can be a little harsh on us. All of the bad things we talk about Jefferson Street in North Nashville, but very rarely did they talk about good things. So I wanted to bring something good and let people know that it's not nearly as bad as they think that it is. And, you know, I'm originally from Memphis, and they would block off the streets and start a party. And that's what I decided that we would do to try to bring some business back to the community for those businesses that were here. We've got wonderful businesses on Jefferson Street and want people to come out and support those businesses and love the community and respect it. So we decided to have the Jazz and Blues Festival. And our first year was 2001. Started out with 1,500 people, and we grew, I mean, just exponentially over the years, all the way to where we were doubling in attendance from 3,000 to 6,000 to 12,000, almost to 30,000 people on the street. We did the last time on Jefferson Street in 2010, and that was reason being, a lot of people didn't realize this, but the church, House of God Church, also has their convocation. And the festival had gotten so big that it prevented people from being able to get to the House of God Church for their annual convocation, which was held that same weekend that we had the festival. So the bishop overseer, all the way from New York, came down to ask me if we would change our date. And we did not want to change the date because we always did it the third weekend in June to recognize and celebrate Juneteenth. Even though we didn't call it a Juneteenth celebration, we wanted to do it during that weekend because of Juneteenth and wanted to honor that. It's also Black Music Month, so we wanted to honor that and just tried to do it. All in end, we found out that you know how you used to use the almanacs to find out the weather and how it was going to be? Looked at the almanac, and they said that the third weekend in June is the most likely weekend not to have rain. So that's the reason why we chose that, in order to showcase the businesses and just to bring some good spirit back to Jefferson Street. I tell people, you walk down the street, you can feel the joy, the celebration, and the jubilance that our ancestors had when they were here on Jefferson Street. And I think we got to pick that back up, and we've got to embrace it in order to move from our past into our future. Now, ultimately, I would love for the Jazz and Blues Festival to be the R&B arm to the CMA Fest, because we always come the weekend following the CMA. So we moved it down to the Bicentennial Mall to make sure that we did not interfere with the House of God, because, you know, I'm not going to play. I'll play with God.
No.
So I'm like, if they tell me that this one needs, I'm going to find another way. So we moved it down to the Bicentennial Mall. That way we had some facilities, we had seating, we had things, that amenities that were not offered to us here, and it was a better way to control the crowd. And that we were able to upgrade what we were doing and bring in some national artists. And I'm just really excited about that, excited about artists that we've had, and just really, really, truly excited about the artists that we have this year.
Yeah. Well, definitely the amenities make a huge difference when you're putting on a professional performance. And, you know, people that don't put these events on do not understand. It's the little things. Like, you don't have to rent a stage.
Exactly. You know,
build it. Right, you don't have that expense. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And those are the things that largely people do not think about. And all they want to do is what they want to do. But, you know, we like to have nice things. And that just comes along with the territory. So I
exactly. I can't. We have to for it. I mean, we've had some great artists. You know, we started at the Bicentennial Mall in 2011, and we had After 7, and the tickets were $5. Mm-hmm. And it costs to bring these artists here.
Yes, Lord.
You know, and they come, they don't come. You know, you just see the singer, but with them comes, you know, 5, 7...
The band.
8, 9, 10 member band.
Yes, Lord.
And you have to put them up to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, we have $8,000-$9,000 hotel bills. Mm-hmm. You know, we have food bills, all of those things that we have to pay for in order to do it.
Right.
So it, you're right, with those kinds of things. And we're not a promoter.
Right.
We are not a promoter of necessarily trying to do this as our business, but we are a promoter of good music, we are a promoter of good people, and we are a promoter of this good place that we have called Jefferson Street.
Amen.
And we want people to remember and honor it. I know that we have threats of gentrification, but if we can embrace what we have and love it ourselves, I think that we can help usher a new people, a new generation to Jefferson Street and maintain this wonderful history.
Absolutely. And, you know, for across the board respect and love, you know, we have to take care of our stuff in order for our stuff to take care of us.
Yes,
And
yes.
That includes the entire community, not just the merchants, but the residents and the people who come in and out of here or who work over here, etc. We need to pick up after ourselves, and don't be throwing trash down the parking lot and breaking bottles. And, you know, I mean, we need to love our stuff. We can't just talk about it. Can we be about it?
Absolutely.
You know, it's
that's right, and we do have to be about it, and we cannot wait for somebody to always come in and do it for us and get it done for
absolutely
us.
Not.
We've got to do it ourselves.
Yes.
And that way people will take us serious. If we invest and put our own skin in the game, we can get it done.
Yes.
And I think we should get it done.
Amen. Now, you all have 2 days.
This is a
beautiful 2-day event.
Yes.
Father's Day weekend, so the dads, we know the dads will be in full effect.
Exactly. You know they're going to want to see Miss Valerie. But look, you know what, Sharon? I'm so glad you mentioned the 2-day, because let me tell you how we came about with the second thing. The first night, it came after we just started the festival, but it's the prelude to the festival. And we call it Bridge in the Gap. So where downtown Nashville meets uptown Jefferson Street. Mm-hmm. And we used to be on the Shelby Street Bridge, but they made some changes and said that if anything was being held at the Ascend or the Bridgestone or the Country Music Hall, any place downtown, that we could not use the bridge anymore. So we decided, okay, well, we'll go downtown on Fifth Avenue and do it there. So we call it now a sobro party, but we're still bridging the gap where downtown Nashville meets uptown Jefferson Street. Because I think downtown needs different kinds of music, as you said, and I think they need some more color downtown.
Come on and preach now. Come on and preach now.
You know, us being there, and this will make our third year downtown. And when I tell you that those folks who were down there in Bob's Steakhouse and lined up in bar lines enjoyed that music. They were on the sidewalks dancing. I just pulled up the caution tape and told them, come on in and join. Come and join us. And, I mean, they were dancing in the streets. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And last year, Kid Capri was our celebrity DJ. And, I mean, he killed it. It had to be 3,000 people out there. So I am hoping that we're going to have a repeat. We've got Chubb Rock. We've got a happy hour that starts at 4 and goes from 4 to 7. You get 2-for-1 special. Then we got the block party kickoff, where we're going to have our DJ Kenny Smooth come and spin for us. Lewis York comes on at 6:15. We got Will Davenport at 7, Beers and Everyday People at 8, and then Chubb Rock is going to rock the house at 9 p.m.
All right.
So we're going to have a great time and over a block party. And we're on Fifth Avenue between the Koreans Veterans Boulevard and the Mumbrium.
Oh.
And the thing of it is that with us being on Fifth Avenue, we just decided to do that.
Uh-huh.
But you know, the museum, the National Museum of African American Music, is being built at Fifth and Broadway.
Uh-huh.
So with my vision about being the R&B arm to the CMA, we can easily go straight to Broadway with this and be right there in front of the museum and just take on two blocks downtown.
Well, I'm about it now.
And then on Saturday, we've got a children's pavilion, and our Classic Me and You Foundation is going to provide us with this pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts at 12 noon. And it goes on to 3, and it's free. And, of course, our vendors will be out there as well. So we need the kids to come out and enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
And we want the community to be able to enjoy. Now, the block party, let me go back. The block party costs $5.
Okay.
$5. Now, the day of, it's going to be 10. So I just encourage everyone
advance
to come on and buy a $5 ticket.
Advance.
You know, just do a $5 holler.
Okay. For real,
come on down with it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday, the gates will open up, and 5 o'clock, we've got Herschel Babies starting us out. And I just want you to know the T-shirts. You know, you always do a good job selling those T-shirts for us. We got D-Ford Bailey as our tribute on the T-shirts this year.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful.
Herschel's grandfather, the first black man to play at the Grand Ole Opry.
Okay.
And so Herschel comes on at 5, singing a little blues. Then we got the National Jazz Workshop Ensemble coming on at 6. Stacy Mitchard at 7.
Uh-huh.
And Mike Phillips coming on at 8. And I know a lot of people may not have heard of Mike Phillips.
They will when they hear his music. They're going to say, oh, that's who that dude is.
They're gonna be like, oh, my God. He plays with Jill Scott.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited about that, and I mean, being that she lives close and that's her boy, you know, who knows? You never know who you might see at the jazz and
blues festival. No, you don't.
You never know. And then at 9 o'clock, Valerie Simpson comes. People don't really know. She is amazing.
Yeah.
A wonderful songwriter. And I know people know that she did Ain't No My Ass in High Enough, but she did I'm Every Woman. She did all of those Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell.
Yes.
No Precious Love. Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing.
Yes.
And You All I Need to Get By.
That's
she
it.
She is amazing.
Amazing.
And I want people to know she did a lot of Diana Ross's songs, too.
Oh, wow.
You know, Reach Out and Touch was one of hers.
Yeah.
You know,
now,
Sharon,
everybody's on the edge of the seat trying to get these tickets. Can they still get tickets? It's not too late, is it?
Absolutely. They can get tickets now. They can go to our website at www.NashvilleJazzAndBluesFest.com.
Okay. Okay.
And get these tickets. We have $20 tickets. The general admission is $20 for all this amazing talent.
Oh,
now, the day of, the tickets will go up $5.
There'll
be $25.
Excellent.
But we also offer a VIP.
Okay.
Ticket, and the VIP ticket is $30, and it comes with a no-wait entry as well as bottomless non-alcoholic drinks.
Okay.
The entire time.
Excellent.
And it's $30.
Now, give the website.
You can get a weekend pass for $35 in advance for both events.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the
Cool.
For both events.
I got to get my traffic in. Sharon, give that website one more time.
www.NashvilleJazzAndBluesFest.com. That's A-N-D jazzandbluesfest.com.
Okay. Sharon, we know the community is going to come out in droves and support this wonderful event. Sharon Hurt is the president and CEO of JUMP. On 9th Avenue North, they're having their big, big weekend this weekend. Congratulations on a job well done.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you so much.
Absolutely.
And love you.
Love you, too. Talk to you this weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Be sure to check it out. And, you know, I can't ask Commander Chuck about the weather because that's not what he does. But
I didn't think he was going to get a word in. I was crying laughing.
Well, so, I mean, you know, I'm just saying because that's what excitement does. You know, this is a big event for that organization, and I know it because, you know, I'm down with it. And they're down the street from us. And, you know, I got to give up on some love on the community. So I'm like, Chuck, you're going to have to hover, baby. Okay. you know, you're just going to have to hover. Because, you know, you had two Sharons talking. Now, what do you expect?
Exactly.
Now, you know, if you had two Chucks on this report, y'all be yakking all afternoon long. But, now, Chuck, are we back to normal? Because, you know, all the visitors...
Shoot.
Okay, I was just tripping, okay? So,
I can't believe they separated them this year. You know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Bonnaroo and CMA falling under the same weekend at one point?
It was an absolute utter insanity on I-24, okay?
Mm-hmm. At least they separated them this time.
If it was an emergency, you might as well walk, because you wasn't driving down 24.
True. That's
if you
so
had
true.
To go to Atlanta or Chattanooga... You know, go through Alabama or Missouri because you're not getting through.
You know, it's funny you say that, Sharon, because just a few minutes ago I looked at the TDOT cam, and it's already backed up there in Coffee County on 24 on those off-ramps in Manchester.
Oh, wow.
And if that's not good enough for you, you know, trying to get up through that part of Coffee County there in Manchester, they're running so much radar, as you can imagine, with THP up and down I-24 just as soon as you get past, you know, Murfreesboro starting up towards Mont Eagle Mountain.
Okay, so Chuck, well, take us away because it sounds like it's going to be thick this weekend.
Well, it's already backed up there. Right now I'm looking at a backup here where they're trying to clear a crash, and you know how tight it is right now trying to get through this construction here on 440. I'm looking at this wreck. It's 440 westbound, just past West End, Murphy Road, trying to get up to the, you know, to the interstate on the west side, and they're trying to squeeze through here right now on 440 westbound, again, just past West End, 40 east near Briley Parkway. Yes, that's out near the airport. That's an accident with some rubbernecking going on. Rivergate Parkway, rather, at Gallatin Pike. There's a stalled vehicle blocking traffic. Give yourself extra time out here. It's been pretty wild the last few minutes. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance. Be sure not to miss WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's featured artist is emerging jazz vocalist Patrice Zegu. Her latest release is entitled If It Ain't Love. Remember to tune in Thursdays during your lunch break to hear some prime cuts, an interview with the Artist of the Week, and win some brand new music. Music lovers, don't miss the WFSK Feature Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station.
Take care of the children.
children, the children of the world. They are our strongest hope of the future, the little, little boys and girls.
Support for WFSK comes from the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Vanderbilt, which helps adults over 50 rediscover the joy of learning and build community through diverse social interaction. Beginning June 17th, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Vanderbilt presents summer classes, which run through July 31st. Among the classes are the original Fisk Jubilee Singers, their tour and their music, taught by Dr. Paul Kwame, Fisk Associate Professor of Music. Since the ensemble introduced the Negro spirituals to the world, the course will cover aspects of this genre of music, including form, melodic structure, and more. Also being offered is a history of Fisk University, the unfolding story of the struggle to reach the American dream through education. The instructor is Dr. Revis Mitchell, Professor of History at Fisk. Scholarships are available. To register, call 615-343-0700. That's 615-343-0700. We're calling all vendors for the upcoming Fisk Food and Music Festival on Saturday, June 29th. We're accepting applications right now on a first-come, first-served basis for food and non-food vendors with reasonable rates for early birds. The Fisk Food and Music Festival is the place to be in the good old summertime for outstanding music performances in a family-friendly atmosphere on the Grove. Free admission and free parking. Enjoy the Thomas Kane Band, trumpeter Ryan Montagno, all the way from L.A., saxophonist Donald Hayes, and headlining our annual Fisk Festival is number one recording artist Ben Tankard. For more information and details about the upcoming Fisk Food and Music Festival, visit our website at WFSKFM.org or give us a call at 615-329-8754. The Fisk Food and Music Festival, Saturday, June 29th. Support for WFSK comes from National Shows 2, presenting Kenny G at the Ryman on Saturday, June 22nd at 8 p.m. In a recording career that spans almost three decades and 23 albums, Grammy Award-winning saxophonist Kenny G has grafted elements of R&B, pop, and Latin to a jazz foundation, solidifying his reputation as the premier artist in contemporary jazz. Kenny G at the Ryman, Saturday, June 22nd at 8 p.m. For tickets and details, visit Ticketmaster.com. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
We're so happy to have you tuned in today. And as you all well know, the 411 Show, we always have the new books out and the authors. And we're just delighted today to welcome to the show Bill Eddy. He is co-founder and training director of the High Conflict Institute and is senior family mediator at the National Conflict Resolution Center. Now, that means that you know how to get things handled, Bill. Clearly, if you're in mediation and conflict resolution, you know how to get to the point and get it fixed.
That's my goal.
Well, you've done it very well because you are an attorney and licensed clinical social worker, and you work as a part-time faculty of the Strauss Institute for Dispute Resolution at the Pepperdine University School of Law. And I did not realize that the book we'll be discussing today is this book number 14 for you?
This is the 14th book I've written. The others have all been about high conflict personalities in interpersonal disputes, but this one gets into leadership and politics.
Oh, excellent. Today's fresh book is Why We Elect Narcissists and Sociopaths and How We Can Stop. Oh, yes, I think we all need a mental timeout for sure. Now, Bill, let me, before we start talking book, let me get some background on what is the High Conflict Institute, and tell us more about the National Conflict Resolution Center.
Well, the High Conflict Institutes, we're in our 12th year now, was founded with, I co-founded it with a woman, Megan Hunter, who worked with the Arizona Supreme Court, and I worked in San Diego as a lawyer and therapist. And we realized there's a need to really educate professionals primarily, but the public in general, about high conflict personalities, and that we were seeing them take up a lot of time and energy in families, in court cases, in the workplace, etc. So we're really an education and training institute to deal with this kind of problem that's getting bigger these days, and that's high conflict personalities and all the conflicts they get into.
Is this, Bill, something that you have seen just in politics or in leadership across the board?
Leadership across the board, actually. So we're seeing this at all levels. For example, we had a mayor in San Diego who needed to get pushed out of office within about 8 months of getting elected because he had one of these personalities. He thought he was going to be the king, and he was harassing women and bullying committees, and, you know, he wanted to do it all his way. So it could be at any level. We see it in business. We see con artists in business, you know, the Bernie Madoffs, and now the woman with Theranos, who got figured out. And then we're seeing it in world leaders and politics actually around the world, not just here at home.
Now, in your years of observation, are people prone to want to follow the leaders or follow these people because their personalities are so off the charts?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was researching this book and studying these high-conflict leaders, really over the last 100 years, but especially the last 10 years, we're seeming to get more and more of them, is that they really, they appeal to about 30 to 40% of people really like the idea of following a strongman leader or authoritarian leader. But that's still a minority of people. They also trigger anger in people that realize, hey, this person could be dangerous. We've got to stop this person. So maybe about 20% of people react like that. I call them the riled up resistors. Then the mild moderates are people that go, wait a minute, you know, we don't want this much conflict. Don't be protesting so much, but also don't be a jerk. So they don't necessarily follow that leader, but they don't necessarily resist them very much either. I call them the mild moderates. And then there's the disenchanted dropouts who get so emotionally bothered by it all, they just say, I'm not even going to be part of this. And they think they can drop out, but politics affects everybody. So what I realize is people split into these four groups almost automatically when you have a high conflict personality trying to be a leader.
Can you, Bill, describe for the audience, in case they don't know the clinical definitions of narcissist and sociopath, so they're real clear as they're driving home this afternoon what kind of personalities we're talking about?
Yeah, well, basically, let me first say that not all narcissists, not all sociopaths get into high conflict situations. So I define a high conflict person as these four things: is blaming others a lot, all or nothing thinking, unmanaged emotions like, you know, yelling or storming out of a meeting, and extreme behaviors, doing things 90% of people would never do. But when they're narcissists also, narcissists tend to have a drive to be superior. They want everyone to see them as better than the people around them, better than everybody else. They have grandiose ideas. So they really, you know, they say, oh, I can do this wonderful thing. I'll build you a house or build you a building, or I'll do all of this stuff for you. Then they have fantasies of unlimited power. And that's where they can become dangerous, because they don't want any limitations. When they get into politics, they can't stand having to negotiate with people. They don't like legislatures and judiciaries. They'd rather just be the king.
Right.
And they have a lack of empathy. So narcissists, they may be charming at first, but they don't really care about you. And in fact, they use you to be the butt of insults and demeaning behavior. And I've seen them do that with boyfriends, girlfriends, spouses, neighbors, bosses, employees, and we're seeing that a lot more in politics now. So that's a narcissist once they decide they want to get into politics. These are some of the key characteristics.
So I'm certain that in your profession, you probably also see a lot of that online in, Twitter or Instagram or whatever form anybody uses to express themselves. Can you tell from that?
Actually, if you notice the kind of words the person's using, if they're using a lot of arrogant words, you know, saying that you're really stupid or, you know, you're a loser, those kinds of words give away a narcissist pretty quickly. It's that always having to put other people down and putting themselves up. They always see everybody else as having faults, but they never admit any faults of their own. That's pretty obvious, and most people around somebody like that pick it up pretty quick, but you can pick it up online. It's very easy. Just look at the words.
Definitely. Well, you know, right about now, I'm certain that most people are thinking, 10 minutes into this interview, man, that sounds a lot like somebody we know. And, he surely is describing somebody who's on the news every day. I mean, you really have nailed this. I'm like, whoa. Everything that you have described is what we have been experiencing for some years now. And this one particular person who I'll talk about later in the interview, but it just seems like, man, it just ticked off every single solitary box. Now, in the book, you have a whole section to chapter one deals with high conflict politicians. In this chapter, what can the reader expect to discover?
Well, really an explanation of what high conflict personalities, high conflict politicians look like. But also I go into history because people don't realize the power of personality in politics. And I talk about, you know, I'll give one example, World War II. You know, the historians say nobody wanted World War II. There's only one person that wanted World War II, and that was Adolf Hitler. And he secretly built up his army, his air force, and he kept saying, oh, I'm a man of peace, I'm a man of peace. Well, he had all this heavy industry working hard to get ready to invade Europe. And he did, and the result was, through the end of World War II, the deaths of about 55 million people. People he killed in other armies and people he killed at home, the Jewish population and others who he, you know, ruthlessly committed genocide with. And it really was his power of personality. He persuaded a democratic country to make him the dictator. And people go, well, that was unique in history. Well, he was just kind of the first to use radio in everyone's home, to have big marches, to persuade people that he was wonderful. Well, he wasn't, and we see the disaster. But I also looked at Stalin. I also looked at Mao Zedong. And they really had this personality that kind of swept up people, the people that followed them, and then all the people they turned off that tried to escape them often were killed or did get away to other countries. So it's the first chapter is really about the power of personality in politics.
So these people were, is this the 30 to 40% that you spoke of earlier that is attracted to the high conflict personality? They like it at first until, I guess, they get too close to the fire and it burns them up too.
Yeah. Well, at first, it's interesting because if you look at these people like Hitler, the first couple of years, people loved him. You know, he cleaned up the cities. He said, you know, we're going to be great again. Germany's on the rise again. We're peaceful people, of course, but we're going to stand out as superior people. And so at first, that's very seductive. And so for the first couple of years, people really thought he was doing great, and people really supported him. But then, you know, when he went into invading Europe and people were coming home, they were seeing, they were really not only devastated in terms of the deaths of the war, but the economy, German economy really got ruined with that. So that's just one example. But yeah, the strong man idea is a popular one.
It's
been popular in the United States.
Yeah.
We've had different people. Joe McCarthy is one example I looked at in the group. And he was finding communists in the government everywhere in the 1950s. And he had about 40% of people going, hey, this is great, you know, right on, go for it.
Yeah.
But it was all bogus. And once he finally got figured out, which took about 4 years, he got censured by the Senate, 99-1, and 3 years later he was dead, a lonely alcoholic. People follow the wrong person when they look exciting, but they can't see ahead. That's what I want people to do, is see ahead.
So they just get excited about the shiny object in the room.
Exactly. Well put. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is exciting.
Uh-huh.
But they don't realize the pattern.
Yeah.
And that's what my book's about, is the pattern and how it starts out looking really good, but it always turns against you eventually.
Well, you know, in my mind, I guess maybe I've you know, I love interviewing authors such as yourself because it's so intriguing. But, you know, in my mind, it's like an image of the burning bush. And, you know, it looks interesting and it's fiery, and I wonder how it feels or what it... And then you accidentally get too close, and the next thing you know, you're engulfed in flames. And to me, that seems like what happens with the people who are you know, look at these folks with delight, saying, oh, man, this is the answer to everything. And then come to find out it's the exact opposite. So what happens to the person, these 30 to 40% of people, when do they have their awakening?
Well, it's really, all of history says it's really slow. That it really takes a lot for people to let go because they've gotten attached to the seduction, the fantasy of what this person is.
Yeah.
And the best analogy I think of is somebody dating a con man, you know, and they say, oh, but he loves me. And you say, he's a liar, he's a thief, he's no good for you. But he pays all this attention to me. No one's ever paid this much attention to me. So they kind of stay hooked even when things start going wrong, until they really, really go wrong. And it's usually not until the person loses power that they really realize, wait a minute, this was a bad guy all along.
Wow.
And it's interesting, I read some, they quoted some memoirs, and I read like 20 or 30 history books to prepare this. And people, for example, in Stalin's, he had young revolutionaries that totally believed in Stalin, and they went out to the rural peasants and wanted to collectivize their farms. They had individual farms. No, everyone's got to, you know, share a farm. So they pushed people out of their homes, and they tried to persuade them to join these collective farms, and did it by force, if not voluntary.
Yeah.
And then the people, some of them wrote memoirs, the young revolutionaries, after they saw all the deaths that were caused by famine because of this collectivization, and that Stalin wasn't really good. And some of them wrote memoirs describing how we just were emotionally blinded.
Yeah.
It's all about emotions, and that's the problem. That's why it's hard to break through when someone's convinced this is a hero when they're really not.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like you trick the trigger. You just keep, you know, and eventually, if you, you know, you're going to just burn yourself out or, you know. Because I think people do that. They just keep blang, 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 blang until it's like, oh, my God, if you don't stop this.
Right.
And, you know, they just keep going until they, you know, like the Energizer rabbit, just can't stop. Is this, would you say narcissism and sociopathic behavior, are these generational? Is this learned behavior, or is this passed on from generation? I mean, tell us, you know, how all this gets started, Bill.
Yeah, excellent question. There's really three main factors to personality development,
mm-hmm.
and probably the biggest factor is genetics. Mm-hmm. So what combination of genes people are born with. And then early childhood makes a difference. Someone has a terrible early childhood, it could set them on the path of really being a difficult, angry person.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have a difficult childhood and they don't turn angry to everybody else. So it's just sometimes it's a factor.
Yeah.
And then the culture you grow up in.
Yeah.
And what the cultural values. Are we real individualistic? Are we real, you know, community oriented or whatever? And like back in 100 years ago, people had to take care of each other. They had the Depression, two world wars, all of that.
Yeah.
So they're very kind of community group oriented,
mm-hmm.
and now we're very individual oriented, and that's part of our personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I want to say with these folks,
yeah.
is I really feel like, because I've seen these personalities when I've been dealing with families and mm-hmm. therapy, workplace conflicts, legal disputes, I really think they're mostly born this way.
Mm-hmm.
They sometimes just stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
From their other siblings, from their parents. So I think this is one of the personalities in the gene pool
mm-hmm.
that pops up, you know,
mm-hmm.
2 or 3 or 4% of the
mm-hmm.
time.
Does it mean you have a mental illness?
Not something that somebody did so
yeah.
much. All these folks I looked at, their childhood actually wasn't all that bad.
Is it like undiagnosed mental illness or what?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Definitely, because these are personality disorders,
uh-huh.
which is a mental illness,
uh-huh.
and these personality disorders not only destroy everybody else, but they destroy the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. They have a terrible reputation if they don't kill themselves in the
wow.
process of
right.
being awful.
Well,
but, yeah,
less alone the people around them that have to deal with all this insanity. You know, it's just like too much. Anyway, when we come back from the break, Bill, I want to spend just a few minutes on high emotion media. Not that yours truly would ever fit in that category, no. I'm not a high conflict person, I'm peace and love. So I want him to talk about that because that has dominated so many thoughts and opinions of many in this country by some of the things that they tune into or plug into. Additionally, in the other remaining time, I'm going to have to ask or discuss the President of the United States current, because it's just it's the elephant in the room. And I'm just like, I can't believe I've gone this long and not even say it. When we come back from the break, Bill, there's a couple of chapters in particular I want to hit, and then I want to ask your opinion on the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Let me remind the audience, today's book is Why We Elect Narcissists and Sociopaths and How We Can Stop. Ooh, please, exclamation point. My guest is best-selling author, therapist, lawyer, and mediator, Bill Eddy. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Good afternoon. There's just been a wreck on the interstate. It's 24 eastbound near Haywood Lane. It's already been busy now leaving Nashville, headed out to Murfreesboro. It's busy on the South Loop here, the West Loop, and it's also picked up quite a bit in the last few minutes to the North 65 as you make your way up through Madison, a wrecked Priestwood Drive at Bell Road involving injuries. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
I certainly hope that you all have been gaining some insight today into this new book and guest. He has been very good at explaining a lot to cut the confusion out there. We're happy to have on the show today best-selling author, therapist, lawyer, and mediator Bill Eddy. He's the author of 14 books, and today's book is his 14th, and that's why we elect narcissists and sociopaths and how we can stop. So we got help for you. We got help. And Bill, you have really been so insightful today. I just appreciate your training and your knowledge from all the years that you have worked in conflict resolution, etc. Could you go take us back to, I guess this is chapter 2 or 3, that's page 20. You have 4 steps to the high conflict emotional warfare pattern so people can get clear that there's a pattern to this. Can you tell us what those steps are, please?
Yeah, and so these high conflict leaders basically are always somewhat at war with people around them. And everybody knows somebody like this in their personal life, but when it's in a political leadership position, it can be very powerful. So the first step is they really seduce negative advocates, people who will take their side. And they just pour energy and what looks like love into them and just say, you know, you're wonderful, you people are my people, and I'll do anything for you, and they get them to be their negative advocates. And so they get them to point the finger at other people, and everyone else in the whole group says, yeah, it's almost like a mob, where you say, yeah, that person over there, that group over there, they're terrible. And that's the second part, is he teaches them to attack his targets of blame. And actually, I said, some of these high conflict politicians are women, but much more of them are men. So I mostly say his.
Mm-hmm.
So they attack those targets of blame, those people over there,
mm-hmm.
and they use their negative advocates mm-hmm. to attack their targets of blame.
Mm-hmm.
So the result is they really divide a community mm-hmm. that way. They keep saying, you people are wonderful, you're wonderful, you're wonderful, and those people are awful, awful,
mm-hmm.
awful. And by saying that, you know, on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
it really divides a community
mm-hmm.
and really... So all those people start getting angry at each other. And I have to tell you, I've done consulting with university departments,
mm-hmm.
with businesses, with legal disputes, where the people in the organization start hating each other
mm-hmm.
because they've absorbed this seduction,
mm-hmm.
this attack, and this divide.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, while everybody else is fighting,
yeah.
the high conflict person, high conflict leader
mm-hmm.
comes to dominate
mm-hmm.
the community.
Wow.
Because they supporters and they've got everyone fighting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where polarization comes
mm-hmm.
from. It doesn't drop from the sky. It takes somebody saying something
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again to divide people and essentially conquer them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So that's seduce, attack, divide, and dominate. That is from page 20, the high conflict emotional warfare pattern. Now, let me skip you to the high emotion media. You know, I've been in this business for over 40 years, and, you know, I have never been cussed out or called some of the things that I have been cussed out and called over the phone here. And I've worked at multiple outlets doing, you know, a variety of things in the media until
the advent of the term fake news. And I said, now, the fakest person in the room is calling this fake news. So, you know, when the president hated the media, then other people started hating it. So, and they were cruel and mean to us. You have a chapter or so, you discuss high emotion media. Why do you describe it in your book, Bill?
Well, basically, it's getting, it's focusing attention on high emotions like fear, like anger, like hatred, and conflict and crisis and chaos. And so these intense emotions or high emotions have grown, I would say, you know, over the last few years to be the focus of attention, especially visual attention. And so television, cable news networks, also on our cell phones. You know, we've got Facebook and all these images of people yelling at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one night in the news, they said, and in Parliament in Italy, they had a fist fight last night. And I'm thinking, you know, that's the only time we hear about the Parliament in Italy is when they have a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so the news, in many ways, becomes more and more condensed to the worst behavior, to this emotional behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But what research shows, and I put this in the book, brain research, is if you can get people anxious, the more anxious they are, the more they'll absorb other people's emotions,
mm-hmm.
including a leader's emotions.
Mm.
So when a leader makes everybody upset and fighting with each other emotionally, they gain power.
Mm.
And it's not even conscious. We go, well, if things are in this much chaos, I guess we better follow the leader.
Mm.
So a lot is that we're just getting pummeled
mm-hmm.
with high emotion messages,
mm-hmm.
not from your radio.
Mm-hmm.
But,
we're the jazz people. We're cool.
Some radios do this a lot, but TV especially, I think we're seeing too much of that.
Yeah. Well, I know at one point in time there was, you know, shock jocks and shock radio, and it just seemed like people wanted to get electrocuted all day long if they want to listen to that and start their day off just insane. It just, to me, was like, if you're starting like this, how in the world is your day going to end?
Right.
You know, it just seemed like you burn yourself up doing that. And then come to find out, here's Howard Stern on his book tour. He done burned himself up from, you know, he got paid well, though. But from doing that very same thing, it's from grinding the engine all day. Now, is that the kind of behavior that the Fox News has championed and made a bunch of money on with Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and all these personalities that grind hate constantly? They never stop.
I think that's an example of this. In some ways, it's like in some of the other countries I look at, and by the way, all of these problems are existing around the world today, not just in the United States.
Okay.
But they dominate the TV. Some of the other countries control, like Putin in Russia. Within a year, he controlled all the media, either through his friends or direct government control.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just can keep saying angry messages. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. What's interesting is cable news, mm-hmm. like Fox News, MSNBC, came out in the mid-1990s,
mm-hmm.
after the fairness doctrine had been thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairness doctrine, if you've been in business for 40 years,
I know all about it.
And you have to say both sides
yep.
on an issue.
That's right.
If you've had somebody on the radio or TV.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those things?
I certainly do. And you know what? That is how, when I was in it, that's how we started. And so for me, you know, I interview both sides. You know, I've had conservatives on here, although I didn't agree with them. I still was like, there might be somebody out there that enjoys this. You know, and I've gone both ways. So I just don't want, because that's how I was trained in the business.
Yeah.
And
I
get it.
What we're missing today
mm-hmm.
is you can hear one side and only one side.
Right.
And if that's the only way you get your news,
yeah.
you've got people with opposite world pictures because of the news they're getting that's so one-sided. But I want to add into this discussion that these high conflict personalities really aren't about politics, about left or right. They're really about narcissism and and being sociopaths, because they just want to be the king. And they can be on the left, they can be on the right, it doesn't matter. And so I want people to know I'm not picking on one political side, because there's been these high conflict politicians on both sides. Like South America, you see Maduro in Venezuela, he's far left, and you see what's going on there when he wanted to be king. And now we have Bolsonaro in Brazil, and he's on the far right, and he's headed down the same path. He wants to get rid of the legislature and judiciary and run the whole show himself. That's where the problem is. It's not really about politics. It's about personalities and how they get promoted.
Now, would you say, do nationalist, racist, or folks that, you know, don't like people of other races and colors, is just this some of the, are they exhibiting that behavior, or is that something entirely different?
No, they are. They are exhibiting that behavior. That's that preoccupation with blaming others, all or nothing thinking. You know, my group's the best group and all other groups are bad. Unmanaged emotions and extreme behaviors. And we've seen that. I mean, in San Diego here, we had a shooting at a synagogue just, you know, a few weeks ago. It's that the kind of message of hate, but it usually takes a leader to activate that, and that seeing the last 3 years, we have a leader who's divisive and activating, I think, these types of messages. And so all these people that were out there, but they felt like they had to keep their mouth shut because society was going in a more tolerant direction, that diverse direction, and now they've got somebody that they can copy. So, yeah, I think they're activating some of the high conflict tendencies of a lot of people. And you can see it's the result of this emotional warfare that I just described.
So we see it playing out around the world with a lot of the leaders, you know, like Japan or South Korea or North Korea, rather, or in some of these other places. Are leaders in our country attracted, would that be attractive to them, or Vladimir? So they want to be just like that?
Yes, but what's interesting is these high-conflict leaders are attracted to each other. And it's interesting that, you know, our president said he fell in love with the dictator of North Korea.
Nuts.
But what happens, and I see this, and everyone knows relationships like this, these kind of people just come together like magnets.
Yes.
But then at some point their relationship often blows up. And then they can be very hateful and very dangerous with each other. When I looked at the history, Hitler and Stalin thought they were buddies. And when Hitler started World War II, Stalin was kind of staying out of it with Russia. And Hitler invaded Russia. And Stalin was just totally caught off guard because he thought they were friends. They're not friends. It's like there's no honor among thieves.
Right. Well, maybe our president one day will learn that as he's on his way out the door. Simply because, you know, I think with the people that he's friending, they're all the scallywags. You know, all of them are the rogues gallery. And, you know, he's taken all of our allies and turned them into enemies. Is that part of the narcissistic, sociopathic behavior, that everybody becomes your enemy?
Eventually, yes. In other words, to be a narcissist, you kind of look at the high-status people and you join them. But then now you step on them to get higher status. Mm-hmm. And eventually narcissists can't have any equals to them. They have to be superior to everybody. Mm-hmm. But sociopaths really want to dominate other people. Mm-hmm. And so they want to push people around, move people around. And so both of these, you'll see them switching. They'll mm-hmm. befriend somebody,
right.
But that's just a tool. They're right. not... They have no friends, and that's one thing. You look at all these folks, they have no real friends.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real love in their relationships, mm-hmm. even in their families.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a tool. Either they're a trophy or they get mm-hmm. pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the problem, it's smaller than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
So put things in perspective.
Right.
Educate people. But always treat people with empathy, mm-hmm. pay attention, and give them respect, mm-hmm. even when they have totally different opinions. That's one of the most important
Absolutely.
Things I want to say.
Absolutely.
We're in this together, and high-conflict people, there's a lot more of everybody else than there are of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them make us so upset we can't work together and talk to each other.
Now, that's the talk right there. That's it. That's the stuff. That's what's going to help somebody. And, you know, it's you know, so strange as I hear you say that. That is what these personalities want somebody to give them. And yet they don't want to go down the street and give it to somebody else. But you know, that. I mean, it just is so insane. I know you stay busy, Bill. I know you do. Anybody that I know who's a therapist or a counselor, y'all some of the busiest people I know, because there's a lot out here to diagnose and, of course, to help people move through. Bill, this has been absolutely fascinating, and I certainly do appreciate this interview with you today, and I'm so glad we got a chance to discuss your new book, Why We Elect Narcissists and Sociopaths, and how we can stop. And please go and pick up a copy of this book. You all might learn something about somebody. Now tell our audience how to follow your work and, of course, to get a copy of your book.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's available everywhere. You can get it at Amazon, at your local bookstore, your independent bookstore. And our website is highconflictinstitute.com, and you can get all the books through that as well.
Definitely. Well, I'm going to go on your website because, you know, conflict resolution is a lot of the work at the grassroots level in, you know, building diverse communities, etc. And our station, I keep us involved in things of that nature. We're on a historically black college campus, but in a community that has had some racial conflict history. So, you know, I'm going to definitely check more into the Institute. And Bill, I just can't thank you enough for your time.
And I really appreciate you, and you've asked all the right questions. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm keeping your phone number.
I'm good.
All right, Bill, thank you so much. You have a glorious day.
Thank you.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.